You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. Tonight, we'll be discussing Proposition 10 and landlord-tenant law. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number to us right here in the studio is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. If you're calling outside of the local area, or if you're calling outside of San Francisco, call us on our toll-free line at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. My guest in the studio tonight is my go-to landlord-tenant attorney, Sal Timpano, with offices in San Francisco. Sal is, of course, a frequent participant in Call a Lawyer and frequent guest right here in the studio as well. Let me welcome you back to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you, Jeff. It's a pleasure to be here.
And while we may be talking about specific areas of landlord-tenant law, you can call regarding any landlord-tenant question. I won't encourage you to try to stump my guest, but any landlord-tenant question you have for my guest is welcome. And again, the phone number to us right here in the studio is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or if you're calling from outside of the local dialing area, our toll-free number is 866-798-8255. And again, that number is 866-798-8255. And I'd like to start here. Sal, before the show, we were talking about Proposition 10. Just what is Proposition 10?
So Proposition 10 is a initiative to remove Costa Hawkins from California state law. And the Costa Hawkins provisions prevent city and county governments from imposing rent control on all the properties within their jurisdictions. They can only impose them on certain properties and not the others.
So as I understand Costa Hawkins, that limited to older properties or properties that are perhaps more than roughly 20 years old.
That's correct. And for example, the way it works in San Francisco, no rent control on anything built after 1979, June of 1979, no rent control. And there's also no rent control regardless of build date on single-family homes and condominiums.
Does this actually change the local ordinances or only enables local ordinances to go to older homes?
Good point, Jeff. It does not. Proposition 10 does not in itself change any local ordinances. All it does is repeal the California Costa Hawkins state law. That's all it would do. And then the local jurisdictions would then impose their rent control as they see fit, because it's within their jurisdiction to control rents and vacancies. So they'd be able to control both of those without any limitations if Prop 10 were to repeal Costa Hawkins.
So if I live in a suburb, for example, that doesn't have a rent control scheme, it sounds pretty unlikely that this would change anything for me.
I think that's correct. I think you're correct. It probably would not change.
Now, earlier tonight when we were talking, and I see there's calls coming in, so if you're on the line, please be patient. We'll be with you in just a moment. But earlier tonight when we were talking, we talked about Proposition 5. Proposition 5 is not a landlord-tenant law per se, but what is Proposition 5 and how might it change the landscape?
Yep. So Proposition 5 simply would allow homeowners 55 years or older to sell their homes, purchase more expensive homes, and essentially keep the same percentage of tax on the more expensive home. So it's an incentive to them not only to it doesn't disincentivize moving, but it also it's an incentive to buy a more expensive home and not have to pay the more expensive tax on that home. They still take their percentage tax from the old home.
Now, I'm not a real estate attorney, but my understanding of Prop 13 is that it allowed somebody 55 or older to sell their home to downsize without paying a tax penalty.
That's correct.
And as I understand Proposition 5, is that lifting that requirement to downsize and basically letting somebody who's been grandfathered in keep roughly the same tax rate?
It does allow the purchase of a more expensive home without the, I don't want to call it a penalty, but without paying the same tax that somebody under 55 would be paying.
Are there any other issues that you see coming down the pipeline, whether it's on the ballot tonight or next month, whether it's something that might be coming up in a bill?
Well, you know, I hear a lot of talk of perhaps the state should consider subsidizing housing with state funds rather than individuals being required to subsidize housing through rent control. But I don't know, you know, that's probably come up before, but I don't know how close that is. But that's something that I've been hearing a lot of lately, surprisingly. I thought it was a novel idea. I don't know where it's going to go, and I haven't thought it through. But I do hear about that, Jeff.
Now, the governor has signed a flurry of bills last week. Are you aware of any that relate to landlord-tenant? I know there's a whole host of bills that were signed that relate to criminal law, but any that relate to landlord-tenant that you're aware?
If there are, Jeff, I'm not aware of them. I haven't heard of anything that the governor did that affects landlord-tenant law, particularly in San Francisco or anywhere, really. I just haven't heard of any.
I see the lines backing up. Our first caller, though, rather than wanting to be heard on the air, our first caller actually left a question behind, wanted me to read this off the air. This caller is a landlord. And the question is, I have a duplex in Stockton, and it's recently been for sale. It's fully rented. One of the tenants has been there for 3 years, the other for over 20 years. The buyers have made an offer that I've accepted, but they require that I give both of the current renters a 60-day notice, as they want to occupy both units for themselves and their family members. And the caller's question is, what, if any, financial obligations does he or she have towards these tenants that are going to be forced to move out?
Well, if the seller, who's the current landlord, serves 60-day notices, one financial obligation will be to deal with the security deposit. And also, any litigation that might ensue regarding the 60-day notice. I mean, the tenants may not move. They may have a basis to fight the notices, and then there would be a financial obligation there, and also time, because the eviction process, although an expedited process, still takes time. So that may frustrate the closing, you know, maybe prevent the closing. I don't know.
If the landlord has to return the security deposit, how's that calculated?
So state law requires that a landlord return the security deposit, requires that the landlord provide an accounting for the security deposit within 21 days of the move-out date. And typically, landlords will include the security deposit refund within that 21-day period. But what's important under the California state law is that the accounting is provided within 21 days. And the money should be too, but the statute isn't so clear on that. But most landlords will just provide the refund at that time. And the refund is for damage to the unit, not for regular wear and tear, but for damage. And it's up to the landlord to be reasonable in how they charge for those things. If the tenant feels that they have been treated improperly, they can always sue their landlord for violation of the security deposit law and not refunding the proper amount of security deposit.
Before returning to the rest of this question, I see there's a caller on line one. Are you still with us? Doesn't sound like line one is ready, so I'll continue. The landlord feels badly. These have been good tenants, and she feels badly about having to kick them out, but has a need to sell the place. She's been told that she should offer them a move-out incentive and possible cash settlement. Exactly what is that typically, and how much is customary?
Well, Stockton, I don't know what's customary in Stockton. The reason for offering a move-out incentive is, there's multiple reasons. One, it sounds like in this case that the landlord feels, bad about asking the tenants to leave and, in fact, doesn't even want to serve the 60-day notice. But if the landlord does choose to serve the 60-day notice, the landlord can certainly offer some incentive. And it's usually based on moving costs. What does it cost to move? And presumably the tenant can find, substitute housing in their neighborhood of choice and then maybe get an extension of time to move beyond the 60 days. So whatever the moving costs are, plus some reasonable extension of time to facilitate the move, that would be reasonable. And the reason it's done is to, in this case, to help the tenant, but also to avoid the tenant litigating the validity of the eviction notice. Because even if the tenant loses, they're still going to get some time out of that, which in this case might be harmful to the landlord's sales transaction.
I see we have a caller waiting on line two. Are you still with us?
Yes.
Welcome. You're on your legal rights.
Hi, good evening. I'm disabled. I've paid rent for 30 years and was the primary caregiver for both of my parents. It's documented with my SSI disability. My siblings filed an unlawful detainer, and now they're trying to evict me. Do I have rights as a tenant because I have the letter from Social Security that I paid rent for all those years? And if I have a life estate to stay in the house as for the remainder of my life until I die, how could they evict me when I'm an owner?
If you're an owner, you're not a tenant. So you have no tenant's rights. You can be displaced as an owner in different ways, but you have no tenant's rights if you're an owner. As far as Social Security having documentation that you've paid rent, I don't know how they would monitor, how Social Security monitors that. I don't know if it's a form that you filled out that you told them you were paying rent. I don't know. But if you're an owner, then you're not a tenant.
But I was, the siblings removed me as a trustee and removed the property out of the trust without my permission. And Eviction Defense Collaborative is saying that my letter proving that I was paying rent for 30 years with Social Security signed by my father that wrote the trust that left me a life estate might give me tenant's rights.
Yeah, and I suspect that the reason they're telling you it might is because it might, but it might not also. It all depends on whether or not you became an owner after that. Because if you were a tenant but then became an owner and you're an owner now, that's what you are now. So I you still have a right to the property as an owner. I mean, you still have a right to use the property, and if everybody doesn't agree on the use as owners, then it has to be sold. And if you can't agree on it yourselves, the court will order a sale. through a, you know, a lawsuit. So, I mean, you do have property rights one way or the other, either as a tenant or as an owner. It's just a matter of figuring out which one of those two you are.
Yeah, so a trustee beneficiary that's allowed to stay in the house and not pay rent and not be able to sublet, is that an owner or is that a tenant?
That's really going to require more than what we could do on this program.
I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Greg, thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights. And Tara from San Pablo, you're on Your Legal Rights. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Tara, and I live in public housing. I'm 72. I'm disabled, and I was given an eviction notice, and that was, well, I'm not sure, but they came to inspect my apartment, and they explained to me that something, you know, things shouldn't be in the windows, in front of the windows. And then they said that they're going to do a second inspection, a HUD inspection. The first one was the Housing Authority inspection. Then they said they were going to do a HUD inspection. I don't exactly remember what the letter said because I have dementia. But it makes me feel very uncomfortable. And the letters that they send me in the mail are kind of scary. And
Tara, let me ask you this. Did you say that you received an eviction notice?
Yeah, and they're supposed to come tomorrow to inspect my apartment. And one thing that really bothers me is that they say that, what they do is they just send you a letter saying when your next appointment is, and you can't bargain with them and say, well, I have to go to my doctor on that day, so I won't be able to. So if I ask them to give me a different appointment time, they won't give me a different appointment time. They just tell me that they'll come into my apartment without me being there.
So Tara, let me just clarify then. You didn't get an eviction notice. You got a notice of entry, correct?
No, it said eviction on it.
Okay, well, an eviction notice doesn't give you notice that they're going...
They won't allow me to... I mean, if I do see... If I need to go to a doctor on the same date, you know, like if I make the appointment first... And then they send me a letter saying you're going to come on that day. Then they won't budge as far as, making a different appointment.
Tara, what city do you live in? What city do you live in?
I live in San Pablo.
San Pablo. What's the Jeff? What's the nearest
you? Tara, the bar associations all maintain lawyer referral services. You need somebody that can actually look at your letters and help you figure out how you respond to them. The Contra Costa County Bar Association has such a lawyer referral service, and they should be able to they should be able to assist you in finding somebody for somebody with limited means to be able to find a lawyer in this area that works in that specific part of the Bay Area that can better assist you than we can on the air when we can't see any of your documents or see what's happening in your apartment. My suggestion is you call the Contra Costa County Bar Association. Their telephone number is 925-825-5700. And it would be very helpful for you to have somebody that could look at your letters and really give you a sense what to do next.
And do it tomorrow, first thing in the morning.
Deficit disorder. Can you say that again, please?
Yes, the phone number to the Contra Costa County Bar Association Lawyer Referral Service is 925-825-5700.
825. And
Tara, if you stay on the line, there'll be somebody.
I have arthritis in my hands. It's
okay. I understand. I understand. And if you stay on the phone, somebody will come on the line in just a moment that will talk to you off the air, can take a bit more time with you, and give you the numbers, okay?
Thank you.
Okay.
Tara, thank you for joining us, and best of luck.
That's tough.
And Steve from Oakland, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
Very well, thank you. I have a quick question. I have a building, 6 units in Oakland, and homeless have moved in the area. The who live under the overpass, and my tenants say that they've been breaking the mailboxes and stealing mail. I've gone over there, changed locks a few times. I know it's my responsibility, but at what point is it enough is enough, where they need to get a camera or some security, because I can't be watching over the building. I don't live there.
Mm. Steve, is it?
Yes.
So if the mailboxes are in the common areas,
it is.
Yeah. Then you're the only one that has control over the common areas. The tenants don't.
They can get in. It's like right in the front of the building. It's an older Edwardian style building, and I don't want to change the integrity of the building and put one of those ugly big boxes in. Everyone has their own little mailbox.
Yes.
The Home Depot kind where I can pop a lock.
Sounds like I might have lost you.
Steve, you still with us?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, now you're back.
So, yeah, it's one of those kind where they're older mailboxes. They're not super cheap, but I can replace the locks. So what I'm trying to do is just figure out, is it my responsibility at this point if I have to go over there, you know, once a month, twice a month to change these locks?
Well, I with respect to a security camera, in my opinion, that would be your responsibility because it's going to be in the common area. So if you're going to go that route, I think it's your responsibility to put up the security camera. Perhaps you can keep those mailboxes there. It sounds like they look nice where they are.
They do.
But maybe, put a mailbox somewhere else. I don't know how feasible that is. I understand you want to keep the integrity of the building and the aesthetic value, but there's got to be a fix to this. Obviously, you should let the police know. You should encourage your tenants to let the police know, so it's a building-wide effort. But if you're going to put cameras, in my opinion, that would be your responsibility to do if that's necessary. I don't know that it's necessary. Maybe you can put a mailbox somewhere else. You'd have to alert the post office and maybe put signs on those mailboxes that say the mail is now to be deposited at this other place. You might actually have to go to the post office and tell them that so they know where to place the mail. But I'm sure you've considered that already, but maybe look at it again. Anything else I can...
I'm just wondering, is there any, with the homeless situation that's happening in Oakland and they're moving in everywhere, is it possible, I don't really know, I mean, maybe just to put up a lock or some kind of gate in that common area is what I'm thinking.
As long as the tenants all have keys to the gate, and it's a security gate, You know, without
That's
seeing the
option.
Building, I'll just assume that it would be a security gate and be welcomed by.
That might be the only solution then.
I could give you another one that might help. I don't practice landlord-tenant, but one thing you might consider is they have security cameras you can pick up fairly inexpensively, whether at Home Depot, Lowe's, or even online at Amazon for a few
like
$100.
Ring or something. I've seen that.
Well, they'll go back to your cell phone, so it'll alert you if something changes, and you could even give the address or the specifications to your tenants so that they can monitor their own mailboxes on their time with the camera that you put in, and that might pose a partial solution.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds good to me. I didn't think of it that way. I didn't know that they could. So if I buy this system, each person can monitor it on their phone?
Precisely. You
okay.
should be able to set that up. There's a few different ones out there. I'm not sufficiently familiar that I would advocate for any one, but it might be a place to start looking for a solution.
Much appreciated. Thank you, and have a good night.
Thank you for joining us.
Good night.
And again, you're listening to Your Legal Rights. I'm Jeff Hayden, and tonight we're discussing Proposition 10 and landlord-tenant law with San Francisco landlord-tenant attorney Sal Timpano. While we may be speaking about a proposition or specific areas to specific people, you should feel free to call regarding any landlord-tenant issue, whether the landlord side or the tenant side, any issue that may be pressing for you. Again, our phone number here in the studio is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. If you're calling from outside of the local dialing area, feel free to call us toll-free. Our number is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Mark in San Francisco, welcome. You're on Your Legal Rights.
Good evening. So I have two questions. The first relates to Proposition 10. So I live in San Francisco, but I also own a condominium that I rent out to a couple. And so I understand that with the repeal of Costa Hawkins, it would be left to individual municipalities to set standards. I'm wondering if we could look into a crystal ball, if your guest has any thoughts about what would likely be the course in San Francisco, and specific to my case, are they going to extend rent control to single condominiums? What might I expect, because I won't say wary, but I'm concerned.
I understand. Everybody's concerned. You're not the only one on both sides of the issue. The San Francisco Board of Supervisors, up until very recently, maybe a few days ago, they were silent on their position. They now are supporting Prop 10, and they're supporting it all the way. They specifically included condominiums in what they would control as part of what they would control if Prop 10 repeals Costa Hawkins. So what you could look forward to in that circumstance, I mean, it's a guess at this point. You know, they haven't made any decisions, but they'll probably start off by just imposing the same rent control that's on everything else that's rent controlled and vacancy controlled. So depending on when your condo was built, you may not have vacancy control, but you would, you could potentially have vacancy control on it, you know, if Costa Hawkins were repealed.
Okay, thank you. My second question is, as it results...
Mark,
I'm
before
also...
you get there, I'm going to ask you to hold that question for
sure.
Just a moment. It is close to the half hour, so we do need to break for just a moment. You're listening to Your Legal Rights, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1111. 1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information. And now we'll get back to Jeff Hayden and your legal rights here on KALW San Francisco.
Mark, thank you for bearing with us. And you had a second part to your question?
Yeah, so it's a distinct question. So it turns out that I'm actually also a resident manager of an apartment building where I've been for 17 years. And I initially took this role and received a work contract, which specified certain responsibilities. And then it distinctly said that effectively my occupation of the unit was contingent upon my employment in that role. So technically, if I were ever terminated from the role, I would lose the apartment. At the same time, it was owned by an elderly couple, private individuals. They gave me a lease document, a San Francisco lease document. We both signed it, although it didn't specify any particular rent amount. It is a lease. And it hasn't become any sort of contentious issue thus far, but I always wonder if it came to a legal scrutiny of my status and whether I would actually be able to confer tenants' rights, which document would trump the other, or how might that be adjudicated?
Well, that's a tough question. At least you have an argument for whichever one of those situations you want. If the lease document came after, then, would stand to reason that it replaced your employment contract, or at least gave you tenants' rights in addition to your employment contract. But even if it came before, so then you were a tenant, and then the other, your employment contract doesn't confer any additional rights on you that you don't already have, but you have tenants' rights from the prior lease. So you've got a colorable issue, so to speak, an argument. As far as what the final answer is, I couldn't tell you.
Fair enough. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for joining us. And Tamara from El Cerrito, you're in your legal rights.
Yeah, hi. And Jeff, I just wanted to thank you again for taking over the program. You're wonderful.
Thank you so much.
Put a big smile on his face.
he had big shoes to fill. He's filling them. This is sort of a, it might not be too much of a hypothetical, but I live in El Cerrito. My building was sold, and I was in a two-bedroom unit that was, I guess, priced under market. And for a variety of reasons, I moved into another unit in the same sort of apartment complex. There's only three units. But they were going to turn my two-bedroom into a three-bedroom because there was an illegal unit underneath, and they didn't want to have an illegal unit anymore, so they were going to incorporate it. At this point, I'd been living here for about 5 years, and I was on a month-to-month. Did they owe me, this is sort of like a previous question, in Contra Costa County, do they owe me anything more than like 2 months before, if it was an eviction, if they had wanted to go that route?
If they want, choose to evict you and you've been in the unit that you're in for more than a year, then you're entitled to 60 days notice.
Okay, but nothing more than the 60 days notice, right?
Correct. Nothing more than the 60 days notice. You're also entitled to a security deposit accounting, 21, that has to be.
Oh, that was the other question. I thought a long time ago, and maybe this was when I was in a different county, but in some counties you got interest on the security deposit. Is that no longer true?
No, it is true. In some counties, there are interest requirements on security deposits. In your county, there are not.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
This was, a while back. Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, and thank you for joining us.
Good luck.
Thanks. Bye.
Angie from Castro Valley, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
We hear you fine. Welcome.
Okay, great. Oh, thank you. And this is just so serendipitous. I'm a new listener. I listened to 88.5, and someone gave me your information the other day, and I turn it on tonight, and this is just directly related to something I'm going through right now. This is beautiful. Thank you for being on the air. So I am going to be 55 next month, and I own a very, very large lot with a house on it in Castro Valley, and it's just becoming too much. So, Jeff, you asked a question a little while ago about this Proposition 5, and this is great because I didn't know any of this. This is wonderful. Thank you so much for bringing all of this to my attention. And I know Proposition 5, you explained it. I'm sorry, I don't know the name of the law you're on, as being beneficial if I want to sell and get a larger place. Well, I'm thinking about selling and downsizing, and Jeff, you had asked him a question regarding Proposition 13 and how it would affect me at 55. But you answered saying how beneficial Proposition 5 would be if I wanted to increase my house. Can you answer what kind of benefits at 55 I would get if I went to downsize?
First, I can tell you our guest is a San Francisco landlord-tenant attorney, Sal Timpano. Sal is
Thank you.
The awesome expert I go to for landlord-tenant.
Thank you very much.
Under Prop 13, which passed... Prop 13 passed close to 40 years ago. And
Correct.
One of the fail-safes it enacted was to enable people that reached the age of 55 to downsize or stay at the same level. So if you move to a house of similar value or downsize, you can do so and keep the same tax rate within your county or within another county that has reciprocity with your county. Otherwise, if you move up, it didn't apply. So what Prop 5 does, as I understand it, is real, and Sal's has more expertise on this than I do, but what I understand Prop 5 to do is to take away the limitation that you can't step up, whereas it lifts that lid. So if you're moving to a bigger place, it wouldn't keep the same tax amount, but it would proportion the new tax to your existing rather than start you out with an assessment based on your sales price.
That's right, Jeff. Yep, that's how I understand Prop 5. Sounds like our caller would be voting yes on Prop 5.
Okay, so it wouldn't negate. I guess I'm a little confused because I want to downsize. I don't want to upsize. And I have quite a bit of equity in my home, too. So I guess, okay, so I will, it's not going to affect Proposition 13 because it sounds like Proposition 13 will be beneficial to me after next month.
Absolutely. Welcome to
Great.
This side.
that's correct.
And do I have just time for one other question?
You do have time for a short question, but the phones are lit up like a Christmas tree, so I'm going to start asking everybody to start keeping the questions a little tighter just so that we can get everybody in.
Okay. If you can't answer it real quick, I'll just hang up. That's fine. My mother just passed away last month, and she had a reverse mortgage on her home. Do we have a time limit that we have to sell the home, or do you know anything about the reverse mortgages?
I do not.
Okay.
I would contact the lender. My recollection, and I do not practice real estate law. I'm a criminal defense attorney, so I can't tell you speaking as a lawyer, but my recollection is that you have a short period of, I believe, 6 months to either pay off the reverse mortgage or potentially refinance so that you can keep the home. It's not overnight. It's not automatic, but the time does start fairly
quickly.
Okay,
thank you so much, and thank you so much for being here. I'm just so glad I tuned into you. I'm going to do it more often now.
Thank you. We appreciate that, and welcome to Your Legal Rights. It's been a pleasure having you.
Thank you. Bye.
Vicki from San Francisco, you're on Your Legal Rights. Welcome.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much for taking my call. I just have a quick question regarding interest on the deposit, the security deposit. So I've been in my unit for 9 years, and my landlord has never paid me interest on the security deposit. So how is it calculated, and how much, do they owe me?
Okay, so if they've never paid you interest, the way it would be calculated, if you wait until you move, is that they'll calculate it. It's not going to compound. It'll just be calculated each year based on the percentage that is set out by the rent ordinance for that year, and then those percentages will be calculated into dollar amounts, and all the dollar amounts will be added up, and then your security deposit will be that amount, the base plus all the unpaid yearly interest amounts. That will become your full security deposit, and then the any subtractions will be from that number. Does that make sense?
Okay, so let's say, for example, it's going to be every year whatever the interest were for that year.
Correct.
And then you will add that to the security deposit that I have. Is that correct?
It gets added, but it doesn't get added in for the second year. It's always the base that the interest rate is added to. The base security deposit doesn't increase for purposes of adding the interest rate.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right.
So if the security deposit is $500, for example, it's going to be $500 plus the interest for that year every year.
Correct.
If it was, and I'm just going to choose a random number to make the math easy. If it was $500 deposit, and the interest mm-hmm. rate was 10%, and you were there 5 years, you would have the $500 mm-hmm. deposit, and mm-hmm. $50 a year for the 5 years. So you would have $250 mm-hmm. coming back for those 5 years, in addition to the $500.
Yeah, that's a good example.
Okay. All right. Perfect.
Alrighty.
Okay.
Thank you for joining us.
But they're not required to pay that every year, are they?
Well, they should be paying it every year. If you want them to, you can ask them to pay it to you, and they'll pay it to you. You know, but they're supposed to pay it every year. If they don't, then it just gets handled at the end when you move.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for joining us. And Omar from Oakland, you're on Your Legal Rights. Welcome.
Hi. Yes, I have a question. My daughter lives, first I have a duplex in Oakland, and my daughter who lives at home, we were thinking of giving a 60-day notice to the lower tenant, that is a two-bedroom apartment, so she can live in there. But now the upstairs unit got vacated because they bought a house that is a three-bedroom unit. What would be nothing has happened yet. This all happened, you know, right as we're speaking. So since the unit is empty upstairs, it's a three-bedroom, it's kind of a big unit, we'll pay a lot of money for the mortgage. I mean, we can't afford to have my daughter up there, so the idea was to have the cheaper unit for her so she can live there. So what would the tenant right would be in, because the unit upstairs is empty right now? Could I evict him? I mean, and given the 60-day notice
to the lower unit.
To the lower unit, it's a cheaper unit. The upstairs is more expensive unit. It's a three bedroom. So, you know, we like to keep it, you know, rented because it's going to help us pay the mortgage. But the lower unit, we wanted my daughter to live in it. But, you know, before there was a tenant, now there is no tenant upstairs.
Yeah. Well, that's a legitimate reason for wanting the lower unit. Unfortunately, I'm not familiar with the details of the Oakland rent ordinance. So what I can tell you is, you should call the rent board in Oakland, pose that question to them, and then perhaps call the local bar association and get a referral to an attorney.
And Omar, for your benefit, the Alameda County Bar Association also maintains a lawyer referral service. And their number is
510-893-7160. Okay, 893-7160. Okay, I figured it probably was a little too particular of the Oakland, you know, rent control board or whatever.
Exactly. But that's where you'll find your answer.
Yeah. It was worth trying. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
And we're going to stay with Oakland. Our next up is Sabrina in Oakland. Welcome. You're on Your Legal Rights.
Yes, hello. Thanks for taking my call. Mine's a commercial rent, a commercial space. Can you handle that one?
Probably.
Okay, good. So anyway, 2 years ago, I had rats invade my business, and because I have a caterer that's right behind me, and the past 2 years, I have lost my life's earnings there, and so my business is half gone, and the landlord tried to give me an eviction notice. I do have a lease, and do I have any repercussions? What can I do? Is there a way I can collect some of the money that I've lost?
You know, the answer to that question is going to be primarily in your lease, what you're responsible to do, what the landlord's responsible to do, and then the facts that you can show for how these rodents are getting into your unit. Does the landlord also own the building in which the catering business is located?
Yes, it's a huge building. The caterer had just come at the time, like within 9 months, and I got infested with the rats. I mean, I have videos and pictures. And he had just inherited, like in June 2 years ago. And so he inherited the building. I called him in September, and he gave me an eviction notice. And at that time, the real estate wasn't in the news, so I didn't even know my own lease. And so I had to hire a lawyer just to maintain, and I figured it out and got rid of the lawyer because he was doing whatever the landlord wanted. So he raised my rent 5 times within 2 years because his father didn't raise the rent every year. It's a huge building, so it's commercial. And rats have been in the entire building, but he took care of all of them, and I'm at the end. So all the rats came running to my place. But I deal with constant... It's a beauty shop, so I deal with people all the time. So I lost half my business. They didn't come back.
So rats were visible from your sales floor?
Yeah, absolutely. And they died on my floor. They ate up my wires, my phone, my towels, I mean, you can hear them moving, so that's why I lost a lot of customers, even though I never told them I had rats. And instead of the landlord helping me, he just threw me a notice of eviction and told me that he has a renter already. I have that recorded.
What does the eviction notice say? Why are you being evicted?
At the time, he gave me 60 days to get out.
Has the 60 days passed?
Oh, yeah, this is like 2 years ago. So I already took care of that, and then I fired the lawyer because I realized I have a lease. He can't just kick me out.
Yeah.
He became a bully, and the lawyer agreed with him. Lawyer didn't know anything, sadly, about real estate law. And so he raised my rent 5 times within 2 years, like I said, and didn't raise any of the neighbors, just mine. So they got scared. So he was using me as an example. So nobody opened their mouth. But I'm the only one that lost clients. They have a different kind of business. And he did take care of their rats, but he never took care of mine. And I did bring the exterminators, and I had several of them come out. So I do have written proof that where they came from, they located the area they came from. So I had nothing to do with it. They came into my business.
Well, Sabrina, I think you've got to get familiar with your lease and see whose responsibility it is.
I am familiar with the lease. I wasn't then.
Yeah.
I'm completely familiar with the lease. But, you know, the lawyers don't want to go after it, so I'm not sure what to do. I mean, he's a pretty tough guy. He owns a lot of property, so they just don't want to mess with him.
Well, they may not be... I mean, you've got to get somebody to tell you if you have authority under the lease to sue the landlord for your lost business profits. That's what this is about.
I spoke with my insurance because I didn't tell them at the time. But my problem is I want to make sure that I have a case before I approach them, because the insurance said that they have to talk to the landlord and investigate. But the minute they talk to him, I'm sure, my lease is going to be up in 2021, and I don't want to be forced out. And so that's why I wanted to make sure I have a case before I can even do anything. I mean, the insurance is willing to come in and do the investigation and look at my video of all the stuff.
Sabrina, you might consider getting a second opinion from an attorney, whether it's through the lawyer referral service or whether it's a private attorney that you meet with that can actually look at your lease and give you some good advice.
Yes.
Again, if you want to try the lawyer referral service, the number for Alameda County.
Yeah, I wrote that down. I wrote the number.
And they're
down
on 16th Street in downtown Oakland.
So that's an excellent suggestion. Yeah, so they can review the lease with you and point out the parts that apply to your questions.
Okay. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
All righty. Thank you for joining us.
Sabrina.
Good luck, Sabrina.
Thank you.
And Pamela from San Francisco, you're on your legal rights.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm just wondering, is it possible to say when you want to rent a unit, can you say looking for just one person, or is that illegal?
You mean you're a landlord and you want...
If it's right next to where you live and you kind of wished you could just find just one person, are you allowed to say that, or is that not proper?
To limit the number of occupants.
Yeah.
Yes.
You can limit the number of occupants that you rent to, but you cannot limit those occupants from bringing in roommates. So you can rent to one person, and if that one person wants to bring in a roommate, you won't be able to stop them from doing that. Does that
even if it's in the lease, that it's just for one?
So there's a lot of things in leases that are void for various reasons, and that's an example of a provision that would be void. So it would be in there, but it wouldn't have any legal effect.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for joining us.
Thanks.
And we'll stay around San Francisco with Armand. Welcome. You're on your legal rights.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. You're on the air. Welcome.
Okay. I have a problem. I have a house in Modesto with a thoroughfare that goes right behind my back fence. And I was in touch with the fellow who, you know, keeps my place up. And he said there was just, you know, tons of garbage and stuff that he and another guy were going to have to clear up and take to the dump. And I've been trying to keep my place looking really, really good. And I'm wondering, is the county responsible for that debris that people driving by are throwing out?
Oh, wow. Is it being thrown out onto your property or onto property next to your property?
Three properties in a row, at least, are getting it.
Okay. All private properties.
Yeah, all private properties.
Yeah, I think you got to call City Hall and make a complaint.
Okay.
Just start there.
What organization, what department?
I would just call the main number and ask them to direct you to the proper department. It might be Department of Building Inspection or Health and Safety. But if the trash is coming from the thoroughfare, ultimately you're going to want to know who's in charge of that thoroughfare and make a complaint there. I mean, you're just going to have to kind of work with this. But your issue is with the entity that is responsible for that thoroughfare.
Armand, I'll warn you, though, about building inspections. The building inspector usually has a division within it for code enforcement, and they may be concerned about the condition of your property with garbage on it. And they're, in essence, for that area of city control, they're more likely the vice guys that are going to go there and clean it up for the benefit of the public. Not to say to clean it for you, but to basically make you do it. So be mindful of that when calling the building inspector. You might start with 311 and see where the best place to voice your complaint is.
Okay. Okay, actually, I'm living here in San Francisco, so 311 is not going to... I'm going to have to call another organization, but I'll look in the phone book.
Well, 311 is within the city of San Francisco. That's the main number that you can call in and find out what department you need to go to. That is San Francisco specific.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us.
Right.
Again, in San Francisco, Mubasher, you are on your legal rights.
Hi there. I had a quick question regarding a tenant and landlord, if you can help me out.
Sure.
So we live in a two-story, and I live upstairs as, I guess, the landlord, or this is our home. And downstairs, we have a two-bedroom apartment, which we rent out. And everything went great for the last 5 years. And recently, we've had some repair concerns, and we're trying to figure out whose responsibility that would be. For example, the tenant requested to replace the carpet that's been in the unit for the last 5 years. It had a lot of stains and rips and tears, and when they moved in, it was originally, we placed it brand new. And it just this last month or so, they requested it to be replaced and said that you know, it's not their fault. And we're kind of just figuring out, you know, whose responsibility would that be? You know, it was clearly damaged based on, you know, what it looks like right now, and it was brand new when they first came in. Does that fall on us as landlords, or does that fall on them as tenants?
Well, you're going to have to make a judgment call on this. If the carpet was new when they moved in, and the carpet has a warranty period, and it's worn out before the warranty period, maybe it's their responsibility then to pay for it. But practically speaking, the way this would work is you would pay for the carpet, you would apply for a capital improvement rent increase, pass that on to them, so now you're going to charge them rent plus the capital improvement for the carpet, and then the price of the carpet, you'll apportion some of it to be deducted from the security deposit when they move. That's a practical way to deal with this.
So you're saying pretty much go through the rent board to apply for the capital improvement?
Yeah, they're going to amortize it over the length of time that the carpet, you know, should last.
So who makes the judgment on, you know, if this is considered a wear or tear?
You do. Like, you do.
Okay.
So you got to be reasonable about it. Maybe bring in a carpet installer, and, you know, get their opinion. Maybe get them to write a letter and say that carpet's worn out faster than it should. Something that you can use to support a reasonable deduction on the value of that carpet, you know, on the time that carpet should have lasted.
Thank you for joining us, but we are out of town. We are out of town time. Mary, Marv, if you would stay on the line, we can answer your call off the air in just a moment. But we have run basically out of time, and I do want to give my guest a chance to sum up with any last thoughts that he has. If there's anything you want to say in summary or generally before we go off the air.
Yeah, I just want to thank all the listeners and everybody that called in. It's a pleasure to be on the program. I enjoy it. I enjoy the callers, and I enjoy the company here at the station. Thank you.
You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW-FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I am Jeff Hayden. Our topic tonight has been Propositions 5, 10, and generally landlord-tenant law. My guest in the studio tonight, my go-to landlord-tenant attorney, has been Sal Timpano, a frequent on-air guest and participant in Call a Lawyer as well. Sal, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Jeff.
Back next week with Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 in San Francisco or KALW.org. Our thanks to you for listening, to our production assistant, Martin McLean, and to my friend Debbie Kennedy at the controls for the vacationing Joanne Marr. I'm Jeff Hayden. Thank you for joining us.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association Loyals Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information. This is 91.7 KALW San Francisco.